Radio Prague News.
A prison officer was arrested at the weekend for leaking photos of imprisoned MP David Rath to the media. Foreign Minister Karl Schwarzenberg has struck back at German criticism of the completion of the Temelin nuclear power plant, and Roma representatives have asked Prime Minister Petr Nečas to establish a Roma representative to the cabinet. Photos of MP David Rath in prison were leaked to the media by a prison officer. The security inspectorate found that the tabloid Blesk had paid the officer 5,000 crowns in exchange for the pictures. Another prison worker has been accused of collecting personal information on the other people involved in Mr. Rath's case. The men were identified with the help of the company that secures the prison's information system and were arrested at the weekend in a confidential raid. David Rath, formerly the governor of central Bohemia, has been in prison for the last several weeks since being caught receiving what police believe was a 7 million crown bribe. Foreign Minister Karl Schwarzenberg struck back at German criticism of the completion of Temelin nuclear power plant in Monday's issue of Süddeutsche Zeitung. Mr. Schwarzenberg wrote that while other European states use nuclear power, he knows of no other case in which a neighbor comes under such strong pressure to abandon it. The Czech Republic, he said, respects Germany's decision to substitute nuclear energy with renewable sources, in spite of the fact that that decision overburdens the Czech distribution network. Temelin is to be completed by 2025. French, Russian, and U.S. firms have shown interest in the huge order. Representatives of the Roma minority met with Prime Minister Petr Nečas on Monday to discuss ways to improve ethnic relations. The leaders of the Nationwide Association of Roma, which was created late last year, hope to find more effective solutions to the community's problems, which many say are worsening in spite of investments. The association requested of Mr. Nečas that the government establish a Roma representative to the cabinet that would not be a minister but not be without authority. The prime minister told a press conference afterwards that the idea was worth considering. Now turning briefly to the weather, conditions are expected to be cloudy with scattered showers and daytime highs of 18 to 20 degrees Celsius. My name's Christian Falvey. That's the end of the news.
Hello and welcome. You are listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio, and my name is Sarah Borufka. Coming up in today's program, Czechs on Sunday marked the 70th anniversary of the Lidice extermination. We have all the latest sports news, including, of course, Euro 2012 coverage. And in our one-on-one, we meet a Czech jewelry designer, Eva Eislerová. All that and more coming up, so do stay with us. On Sunday, Czechs marked the 70th anniversary of one of the biggest tragedies in the country's history, the extermination of the Lidice village, the Nazis' brutal revenge for the assassination of Reinhard Heydrich, the acting Reichsprotector of Bohemia and Moravia. The unprecedented massacre of civilians following just 2 weeks later by the razing to the ground of a second village, Ležáky, opened the eyes of the international community to the true nature of the regime, and to this day remains one of the most powerful mementos of the Second World War. Daniela Lazarová has more.
Politicians, cultural figures and church dignitaries on Sunday gathered at the mass grave of the 173 men and boys aged over 16 who were rounded up and executed in cold blood by the Nazi regime on the fateful day of June 10, 1942. The town's women and children were taken to concentration camps and Lidice was burnt to the ground in what was to serve as exemplary punishment for those who would oppose the Nazi regime. In a short speech at the ceremony, Prime Minister Petr Nečas said the Czech act of resistance was a turning point in the fight against Nazism.
Long before the international community learned about the horrors of Nazi extermination camps, the tragedy of Lidice alerted the world to the true nature of this evil regime.
Otevřela mezinárodnímu společenství oči a vyjevila zvířecí podstatu nacismu.
The attempt to wipe an entire village from the map was unsuccessful. Villages and streets in different parts of the world were renamed Lidice in a show of solidarity, and many newborns were given the name within the Lidice Shall Live movement launched by Dr. Barnett Stross in Great Britain. To this day, the name Lidice rings a bell in many parts of the world, and Czech officials have stressed the importance of keeping that message alive. Cardinal Dominik Duka.
Lidice stirred the conscience of many people and roused them to fight the Nazi evil. It should keep us vigilant in this day as well.
Among the accompanying events marking the 70th anniversary of the Lidice tragedy was a concert of children's choirs called A Light for Lidice, attended among others by a choir from Britain, Stoke-on-Trent, which raised £1 million to help reconstruct the village of Lidice after the war. An international exhibition of children's drawings was displayed in the seat of the European Parliament in Brussels last week. It shows the best of 26,000 children's drawings from 67 countries who took part in the annual drawing competition organised by Lidice in memory of the 88 children killed in the massacre. The exhibition elicited plenty of interest among MEPs. German MEP Knut Fleckstein says the Lidice tragedy is well known in his country.
The name Lidice is well known in Germany. I think around 12 years ago there was a documentary film in TV who showed us in very brutal detail what the Germans have done there.
On the eve of this year's commemorative event came an apology from German President Joachim Gauck, who in a letter to President Václav Klaus expressed deep sorrow and shame over the war atrocities committed in Lidice and Ležáky. Mr. Klaus said he considered the letter a strong statement and a positive gesture. Prime Minister Petr Nečas likewise welcomed Germany's acknowledgement of its responsibility for these tragic events.
Musím říci, že i to, že na tomto pětním aktu...
I am happy to see many German delegations here today, delegations representing various towns and associations. The growing number of contacts between Czechs and Germans, between our towns and cities, show that relations are now thriving, and I'm glad of it.
Dnes vlastně ve druhém desetiletí 21. století velmi dobré a já jsem tomu velmi rád.
Other events commemorating the destruction of Lidice and Ležáky are in the pipeline. A special issue of postage stamps has been released marking the 70th anniversary of the massacre. On June 14th, a commemorative event will take place in the former Ravensbrück concentration camp to which the women from Lidice were transported. And on June 22nd, the 24th year of the Ravensbrück-Lidice-Ležáky relay run will start from that location.
That was Daniela Lazarova with that story on the 70th anniversary of the Lidice massacre. And if you have any opinions to share on this issue, feel free to email us to english@radio.cz or visit us on our Facebook page. And now it is time for the sports news with Jan Richter.
The Czech national team had an unfortunate start to the Euro 2012 final tournament when they lost 4-1 to Russia in their first game of the Group A in Wroclaw on Friday. The Czechs got their opponents under pressure in the opening stages of the game, but the Russians withstood the futile Czech efforts and first struck in the 15th minute and again 9 minutes later. The Czechs had severe problems in midfield and in defence, which failed to stop the Russian deadly counter-attacks. After the break, Václav Pilaš scored to give the Czechs hope, but the Russian superiority went unchallenged and they added two more hits before the game was over. Czech coach Michal Bílek said the team's play was too chaotic.
We were looking to equalize after we scored, but instead of patience, but now is the time to show the team's strength and character, and I still believe the team is good enough to make up for the defeat in the next two games. So we will analyze our mistakes and prepare for the next game.
Takže rozebereme si chyby a jdeme do dalšího zápasu.
The Czech team is next taking on Greece on Tuesday before facing the host Poland in their last group stage game on Saturday. In tennis, Czech player Petra Kvitová failed to reach the finals of the French Open at Roland Garros when she lost to Maria Sharapova of Russia 3-6, 3-6 on Thursday. 22-year-old Kvitová beat Yaroslava Shvedova of Kazakhstan, Varvara Lepchenko from the US and Russia's Nina Bratchikova on her way to the semis, but Sharapova proved too much for the Czech.
She played very well. She improved a lot on the clay, not only on the clay. And I mean, I wasn't play bad, but she was better on the court, so she deserved it, and she's number one now. So, yeah, it was a good job for her.
Petra Kvitová said she would take a few days off before starting getting ready for Wimbledon, when she last year won her only Grand Slam title. Moving on to field and track now, where 24-year-old athlete Eliška Klučinová set a new national record in heptathlon. Klučinová won an international event in Kladno on Sunday with a score of 6,283 points, breaking the previous record by 15 points and qualifying for the Summer Olympics in London. The 37-year-old Czech veteran Roman Šebele finished second in decathlon at the event with 8,097 points, falling short of the Olympic qualification limit of 8,200 points. The 2004 Olympic champion will yet try to qualify for the Games at the upcoming European Championships in Helsinki later this month. And finally, in hockey, three Czech players with the New Jersey Devils in the NHL are still keeping their hopes alive of winning this year's Stanley Cup. The Devils with Patrick Eliáš, Marek Židlický and Petr Sikora were down 3-0 against the Los Angeles Kings in the best-of-seven final series. But they won the two games in a row when on Sunday the Devils beat the Kings 2-1. The next final game is to be played on Monday, and the Devils hope to repeat the 1942 miracle comeback of the Toronto Maple Leafs against Detroit in the Stanley Cup Finals.
That was Jan Richter with all the sports news for this week, and of course we will be keeping you updated on the Czech performance in the Euro 2012 Championship, and you can expect news from all the games on our website radio.cz. And now it is time for our feature one-on-one. This time Ian Willoughby meets the jewelry designer Eva Eislerova.
Czech artist and designer Eva Eislerova originally wanted to be an architect. Instead, she became one of the most highly regarded makers of art jewelry in the world. After emigrating to New York in the 1980s with her half-Czech, half-English husband, John Eisler. Today, Eva Eisler, as she's known to her collectors, spends most of her time back home in Prague, where she teaches at the Metals Department at the Academy of Arts, Architecture and Design. When we spoke recently at her elegant flat in the city's Malá Strana, I first asked the artist to describe her family background.
My father was a scientist. He was one of the inventors of robotics in the mid-50s, I think. He put together machine tools and computers. At that time, computers were something different. But eventually, he left the country in 1970, I think, because he was teaching at the Manchester University for 2 years and lectured all over. And then he had to come back here to extend the contract, and the Czechs didn't want him to continue his work. And wrote something very nasty in the newspaper, so he eventually saved his neck by leaving.
Did he leave and leave his family behind?
He did, because he knew that it was impossible to stay longer and try to arrange for the others to go. And my mother, she studied at the academy. She had a great career ahead of herself, and unfortunately got married and had 3 children and needed to somehow compromise. But she did her work during bringing up children, and eventually when we all left home, She started painting, and she was a great designer also. So I had parents who, on one hand, it was very technical, and on the other hand, was very artistic.
Do you mind me asking, what impact did it have on your family when your dad left on his own?
Well, you can imagine, we were all kicked out of school, not allowed to continue. I was 21, so it was very hard and very painful. But I started working at some architectural office and eventually did some graphic design. And then I met my husband, who was an architect working in Sial with Hubáček, and I joined them. And then I had children, and when they were 3 and 5, we left for New York, and my life became completely different.
Am I right in thinking that Sial was the architecture office that designed the Yeshjed Tower and the Tesco building?
Yes, Hubáček designed the Yeshjed Tower. And my husband, when he was 24, he was on a team of 3 architects. It was with Martin Reinisch and Masák, who did the MAI, Tesco.
And if we can rewind a little bit, when did you begin being creative, so to speak, and making your own jewelry?
I started making jewelry, I don't know, when I was 15, and painting and sculpting, but I didn't make any big hassle about it. My father didn't want me to go to an art school, so he suggested I study building technology and eventually architecture. And that was actually, and still is, my most interest, because it's 3-dimensional. It's about living environment. It affects our all senses. And jewelry played a very important role in my life when I moved to New York and I had to take care of my children and couldn't go and try to find a job in architecture. So I began working at home, and eventually, and very surprisingly, I was quite successful and got into the best galleries. But at the moment when I could make things larger, I went, basically, I still make jewelry, but I'm leaving them behind for the past years. I'm very, to a great disappointment to my collectors, I'm moving away from that.
What was the direct impetus to you and your husband moving to New York?
My husband was one of the members of a team who was invited for a competition in West Berlin, Tegelhafen. And this was 1978 or something like that. Only the most famous architects were invited, and these young Czech architects. Surprisingly, the jury wanted a first prize for them. And eventually, what was not politically possible, so they received the second prize. And on the jury was Richard Meyer, a famous American architect who had a word with John and said, listen, if you ever happen to be in New York, I would love you to come and work with me. They started corresponding, and at one point we decided this would be a great idea, but then it took us 3 years to get a permission to go.
And how was it for you arriving in New York in, I think it was 1983?
Mm-hmm, exactly. I think I was born for New York. It seemed to me so normal that I'm there, and everything that I imagine I will do there and how I will live, it happened.
Did the fact that your husband already had a pretty good job mean that you had a kind of softer landing than many Czechs who arrived in New York?
No. Richard Meyer is very famous, but also he's not throwing money around. So John, even though he had 15 years of experience, he started as a young architect after school. And he worked for 20 hours a day, so he never had chance to go out and enjoy New York and meet people. But I was full of energy and very curious, so I had to find my own way and find the right people. And what helped me is somehow natural instinct and talent to go to places and to talk to the people that I have to talk to.
Generally speaking, where do you draw inspiration for your jewelry work?
I get inspired by spaces, by architecture, by details, by constructions, anything.
Is making jewelry easier than being an architect? Because with architecture, there's all the physics of it, and making sure that buildings are safe, for instance.
It's a funny question, because if you want to be somewhere and at the top of the world with whatever you do, every field has its own way of doing things. It's like when you ask an architect, can you design jewelry for me? He thinks that he can scribble something on paper, but it's horrible. He would have to sit down and think about it for a month to transform his mind into a different media, a different scale, and then something can really, something that holds the idea in on a smaller scale come out of that.
You hadn't been that many years in New York when the revolution happened here. Did you at all consider coming back at that time in 89?
No. Sorry to say that, no.
When did you begin coming back? And how have you found being back here?
I went to New York together with my husband, and then in 2003, after 20 years as a design partner with Richard Meyer, John decided to start on his own. To one third of his life, he wanted to try to make it on his own, and he accepted some commissions and some competitions to do in the Czech Republic. But if you are in New York and start your own company, you need about a year to establish yourself, to gain clients. And he spent that year, or not only year, few years, on doing projects for the Czech Republic. And we had this 250 square meters apartment in the middle of Manhattan, which was not cheap. But he was spending most of the time here, so I decided that after quarter century, it's time to move back to Europe. But I did not feel I'm going back to the place which I left. It was a completely different place. It was already part of Europe. It was not surrounded by high borders. And I felt that we can bring something here, the experience, and should pass it on.
Czech designer and jewelry maker Eva Eislerová was speaking to Radio Prague's Ian Willoughby there. And this edition of One on One was actually first broadcast in September 2011. That brings us to the end of our regular program, but of course we are rounding that off for you with ABC of Czech, our popular Czech language learning series.
Hello and welcome to Radio Prague's ABC of Czech and its current culinary series. Today I'm joined by
Martin Mikule,
who will help me out with the Czech vocabulary as we look at Czech dishes with strange names. Candle sauce, Spanish birds, Moravian sparrows, chopped pipes, rotten eggs, cat's tongues, rabbi's pockets, little coffins, hairy dumplings. The Czechs will eat anything. These are English translations of recognized Czech dishes, but their names are just metaphors, and in fact the meals have little material connection to the names. Take, for example, the Spanish birds.
Španělské ptáčky.
They are neither birds, nor do they come from Spain. They are small beef rolls, admittedly the size of a bird, stuffed with a slice of smoked sausage, a gherkin, a quarter of a boiled egg, and some mustard added to taste. Another off-putting sounding dish is the Moravian sparrows.
Moravští vrabci.
As you can guess, the Moravians don't shoot poor little sparrows to rustle up some lunch. The dish is a variety of good old Czech
vepřo knedlo zelo,
that is roast pork with sauerkraut and bread dumplings, the sparrows being small chunks of pork meat. Don't get confused if you see a meal called candle sauce,
svíčková omáčka,
on your menu. It has nothing to do with candles. The name comes from the type of meat that was originally used to prepare the meal, beef tenderloin, which is called
svíce
or
svíčková
in Czech, probably because of its physical resemblance to a candle. Today it's usually some less expensive part of a cow, baked with root vegetables, which are then blended, and cream can be added to the sauce. It's then served with dumplings and preserved cranberries. Chopped pipes,
sekané potrubí,
is simply a colloquial name for macaroni. Cat's tongues,
kočičí jazyčky,
are thin chocolate bars. Rotten eggs,
vejce na hniličku,
are eggs that are neither soft-boiled nor hard-boiled. A rabbi's pocket,
rabínova kapsa,
is certain to put off any rabbi. It's usually pork meat stuffed with blue cheese and swimming in a cream sauce. A little coffin,
rakvička,
is a type of dessert. And finally, hairy dumplings,
chlupaté knedlíky,
are actual dumplings whose dough is made from both boiled and raw potatoes, eggs and flour. They are kind of rough on the surface, hence the name. I've used up my imagination for today, but there are certainly many more Czech dishes with funny names. If you know some, please let us know, and we look at them in more detail in one of the future editions of the ABC of Czech here on Radio Prague. Till next time.
Dobrou chuť.
Bon appétit.
Thanks to Pavla Horáková, who wrapped up Radio Prague's English show for today with ABC. And of course, all of our programs, everything you've heard on the show today and much more are available at our internet address, radio.cz. There you can really enjoy a huge archive of reports in both text and audio form. You can also sign up for a free news email and use our podcasting. And if you would like to get in touch, you can do so either via email to english@radio.cz, on Facebook, where we have a page under the name of Radio Prague or Radio Praha. And if you like writing letters, then please do so and write us to Vinohradská 12, 12099 Prague 2. We also have a Twitter account if you're interested in that. We'll talk to you again tomorrow, but until then, from me, Sarah Borůvka, and from all of us here at Radio Prague, thank you very much for listening, and bye-bye.